All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, speaking to you from New York City on this, the second day of February, 2021. And I do like to remind you, I publish a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. You can sign up for that letter by going to miningstocks.com, or you can call our office here in New York City, 718-457-1426, 718-457-1426. And as always, we'd like to encourage you to consider signing up for Chen Lin's letter, What is Chen Buying, What is Chen Selling? Go to chenpicks.com, and I'm delighted to tell you that Chen is with me, and we'll hear a few words of wisdom from Chen in just a few minutes from now. I do want to encourage you all to send along your comments to the newsletter, to the radio show, whatever they may be, whatever your thoughts are, positive or negative or something else. Send them along to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questions@taylor@gmail.com. And we do need to thank our sponsors because without them, there would be no show. Our sponsors this week: Cassier Gold Corp, SK Mining, Novo Resources, Sitka Gold Corp, El Oro Resources, Hannon Metals, Irving Resources, Fury Gold Mines, Great Bear Resources, and Lion One Metals. I should like to mention this morning that SK Mining made public some very strong assays from the last 20 drill holes on its VMS project that is just south of the famous SK Creek mine. Not only was the headline number 35.5 meters, grading 9.5 grams of gold per ton and 70 grams of silver per ton, that was spectacular enough, but the company's geologists, who are experts in VMS deposits, see the possibility that a 7-kilometer-long corridor of these high-grade gold and silver metals may very well exist. And next summer, they'll be testing that theory, but the numbers have so far have been very, very promising. And it looks to these VMS experts like they have another SK Creek deposit potentially on their hands. Of course, it needs to be proven with the drill bit and the drill machine that will take place aggressively next summer. I truly believe that SK Mining is a story you want to keep in touch with. Now, interestingly enough, despite this great news, the stock sold off considerably today, and I would suggest part of that has to do with a very weak day in the mining in the gold and silver sector. But I would also suggest that it has something to do with the idea that maybe there's not a lot of news coming out until next summer, and so a lot of investors have apparently sold the news, and they'll probably be back. But this is a story I think you want to keep your eyes on, and we'll have Dr. Quentin Henning on the show sometime in the near future to talk about it, I'm sure. I've titled today's show, The Upcoming Revolt of the Middle Class. Michael Oliver, Charles Hugh Smith return this week, and the last-minute guest here is Chen Lin, who I mentioned will be with us in just a minute or two. Last summer, Black Lives Matter and Antifa wreaked havoc in most of the large cities in the United States, while the mainstream media paid very little attention to it or to the plight of America's middle class, who have become increasingly impoverished by the transfer of wealth from manufacturing to government-funded enterprises. With their voices not heard for decades and their president censored from bipartisan Twitter and Facebook, the anger of a small number of Hillary Clinton's deplorables triggered the January 7th storming of the U.S. Capitol. Very unfortunate event, for sure. While silencing dissent, the question that I have is, will silencing dissent lead to national unity, or is that akin to pouring fuel onto the fire? Charles Hugh Smith will opine on the reasons for this evolution of the two separate Americas and what impact America's division will have not only on our economy, but more importantly on life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, not only for the middle class, but for all Americans. And I will be talking to Charles Hugh Smith, as I said, during the second half of today's show. And Michael Oliver will be joining me in just a few minutes after the first commercial break. Michael will be with us to talk about his latest views on the economy, and I'm sure you're not going to want to miss what he has to say, but I'm also sure you're not going to want to miss what Chen Lin has to say. He's with me right now. Thanks for joining me, Chen.
Hi, Jay. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, it's really good to have you with me, and I know that you've written a lot about the silver markets and about GameStop and various things. Go ahead and tell us what your thoughts are about this short squeeze by the small retail investors. And there was supposed to be, and some people were speculating, perhaps a short squeeze on the silver markets. But what are your thoughts on those topics right now?
Yeah, they had a very successful squeeze of GameStop. Yeah, it went to almost 500 last week. Mm-hmm. And then their talk came out. They said, oh, let's squeeze silver. That started last Thursday, Wednesday and Thursday. And we started. I thought, well, that's a pretty smart idea because GameStop at that time, 500 is a very overvalued asset. Well, you can, right? And then you come to silver. Will be something very exciting as a new area come to an undervalued asset, right? So reduce mm-hmm. your risk and then squeeze silver. Uh-huh. But there are so these diehard people, they stick on. They just think they can continue squeeze GameStop. They were very upset. Yesterday, silver went up, GameStop went down. So they start cursing silver in the past 24 hours. That's caused silver price to went down. You know, I cannot say, you know, because what they see is they saw, oh, there's still a very high short interest out there, but they don't understand how short hedge fund works, right? Hedge fund can both long and short at the same time, and they can do a lot of different things that normal people cannot do, right? You know what I'm saying? They can short and long in the same time, in the same mm-hmm. account. So mm-hmm. what happened was because they don't want to short that when they couldn't borrow, right? For example, they can long and short at the same time, so they have a short there, have a long there, and then they can sell their long at any time because they don't need to borrow shit. And then mm-hmm. they have already short pre-borrow. So they don't understand, they don't have those ideas, just, oh, short interest high, so we can squeeze them. Doesn't mean that, right? Mm-hmm. This week is the truth. It went from 500 to under 100. So actually, wow. I have a small GameStop short, and I covered it today. So, you know, I wasn't making money for GameStop, just to watch them, right? So, but anyway, it was caused a very heavy selling of silver. Let's see, you know, on Friday, an investor bought 35 million tons of silver. Yesterday, they bought almost 20 million ounces of silver.
Ounces, yeah.
Let's see what SLV, you know, let's see what today's data looks like. You know, I still think we have a good chance to squeeze the silver mm-hmm. because silver still is a very undervalued asset, and there's heavily shorted. You know, these LME came out, they said, oh, we have 1 billion ounce of silver, so you cannot squeeze that. But look, on the future contract, they're almost 1 billion ounce. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then in the SLV itself is 600 plus million. I mean, and all the other ETF together, those silver are sold over and over again. So if there's really powerful squeeze, it can really squeeze the silver, but it just right now it just the party has split. So it's mm-hmm. very hard to focus, and then the shorts are running this, you know, so
mm-hmm. Well, it seems like there's a shortage of physical silver, though, Chen, from what I'm hearing. Maybe that's just at the retail level with small coins and things. I'm not sure. But there is definitely a lot of offtake. Exactly. And I heard also, maybe you can confirm this, that there's been a lot of buying in China for of silver.
Yeah, there were a lot of buying over the weekend. Most of the silver shops were out of silver coins.
Yeah.
Right? If you go to Kitco right now, they're selling silver at almost $100 an ounce per silver coin. Okay? That's
You're kidding. $100 an ounce?
About a dollar, 100, yeah. I mean, some they say on sale, 72. I think 70 or 72 is on sale, okay, quote unquote, per 1 ounce silver coin. I mean, it's crazy out there, but still, it doesn't matter. They just smashed silver down so hard today, I feel like.
Yeah, that's so the paper market. That's the paper market, Chan. That's the paper market, and don't you know, if the shorts are really going to be squeezed, it has to come through the physicals, doesn't it? Ultimately,
right. So I would take a step back. I will watch how many silver was bought today. You know what I'm saying? You look at how many physical, and I'm going to go to. Maybe it was sold. Maybe people get out, and that's okay too. But if there's accumulation of silver today, even the day of today, watch out those shorts, right?
Chen, with just about 3 or 4 minutes left here, what are your ideas about the general equity market now, as we go into this year? And then maybe just mention very quickly one or two of your biotech's favorites.
Right. Yeah. The general market. I'm optimistic about the general market because there's a lot of stimulus, and then there's supposed more stimulus coming. Money printing is unlimited.
Yeah.
So all these people who eventually will realize silver and gold and all the other miner, all the other stock, even your house, I mean, it's very expensive. Yes, it is expensive, but you cannot build a house as fast as the central bank printing money. You know what I'm
saying?
That's
right. So
eventually, hard asset will shine. And then so much money pumping the system actually may create a stock market bubble. We probably more to go with the stock market. And also with biotech, I was so focused on that because the biotech fund, I was talking to you, the biotech fund who own like AMRS and ACHV, that's also you also cover, they also short GameStop. So I have to call them every day to make sure they're okay. They won't have a margin call to sell them. But so far, they're good. They seem to be very strong. So so that's why I kind of know what's going on with GameStop anyway. But you know, they're both very good. You know, you look at they have a very decent news recently. And like ACHV has been very, very strong. The chart looks like it's about to break out again. So I'm quite optimistic.
Well, and for good reason. And I just should mention to my listeners that Chen has had an excellent record, especially in the biotechs. He also follows the gold and silver mining markets and the bullion markets and also energy. Those are some of the areas that Chen has really excelled in, but especially biotech. So it's chenpicks.com, the place to go to sign up for Chen's letter. It's not an inexpensive letter, but if you're a serious investor and have the time to put in and follow up on Chen's advice, I think you can do very, very well with Chen. That is for sure. One last idea, Chen. Any closing comments?
Yeah, I think you know right now all these back to work stock it's relatively cheap. I was advocating to buy in November, sell in December for a huge gain. Now it's actually back to close to November price. Actually, I start buying like a cruise liner, like, you know, those energy stock. Those looks quite cheap. And then I have, biotechs, have very near-term catalysts. So I'll be very busy February.
I guess maybe you're optimistic about COVID then. Do you think maybe the vaccines will do the trick and we can get back to work, hopefully?
But looks like from Israel's data, Israel has the most advanced vaccine development, you know, deployment. This looks very good, looks fantastic from efficacy, safety, all looks very good. Right now we have a variant, different variants in South Africa from Brazil, but I think, you know, with the tweak of vaccine, they probably can overcome that.
Good. Okay, well, it's always good to end on an optimistic note, Chen. Thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us today. It's always a pleasure having you on and getting your insights. So thanks for being with us. Okay, folks, well, we do have to go to break now, but Michael Oliver will be with us right after, so don't go away. We'll be right back with Michael Oliver.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Cassiar Gold Corp. trades on the OTCQB under the symbol CGLCF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol GLDC. Its flagship asset, the Cassiar Gold Project, is a large advanced stage road-accessible gold property with an NI 43-101 compliant resource estimate of 1 million ounces at 1.43 grams per ton gold at the Taurus near-surface bulk tonnage gold deposit and 15 kilometers of high-grade gold prospects. The property hosts several past-producing high-grade gold mines and is in search for the next multi-million-ounce gold camp in British Columbia. Fury Gold Mines is a Canadian exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable, high-grade gold assets across its 3.5 million-ounce portfolio. Led by a management team of proven explorers and developers, Fury aims to generate major catalysts and performance per share by advancing exploration campaigns across Canada. Fury is well positioned to create value for investors with low risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under Fury. To learn more, go to furygoldmines.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have with me for one full segment this week, Michael Oliver. He is the author of Momentum and Structural Analysis. You need to go to olivermsa.com, olivermsa.com. Thanks for joining me, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
Good to have you with me, as always. And well, I just wonder about this equity market. We just talked to my friend Chen Lin. He says he's very optimistic. All this money sloshing around. He doesn't see, at least in the near term, any likelihood that the equity market's in trouble. What are you seeing in terms of your indicators, momentum and structural stuff that you look at?
When we look at the stock market, normally in the past, we focused on the S&P 500 as a broad, you know, multi-sectored index. And quite often it was a good metric, okay, to look at. But starting last summer when the upside really got hot, the index that became the leader and actually in weighting the leading components within the NASDAQ 100, four or five of them constitute 50% of the entire index of 100 stocks. And a handful of those also now represent a huge percent of the S&P 500. So actually, the movement in those indexes has largely been weighted by a very narrow list of big-name stocks that we all know, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, et cetera. And therefore, our focus has gone totally now toward NASDAQ 100 and those three symbols. And we argue and we hold that we'll probably be right on this. If those symbols break down, you can forget all your other delusions about other sectors and so forth. They will take the market with it, because they are the gravitas of the market right now. And we see vulnerability. Now, when we start to see vulnerability in a trend, a turn, in other words, we don't just say, oh, it's over, sell it. No, we look for structures. We look for things that break, momentum things. Price is secondary. And that's not occurred yet. So you have to agree with Chen. Everything's positive right now. But we are getting some signs of momentum overbought readings on monthly action of the S&P and the NASDAQ. We needed this rally early this month. We argued that last in our weekend report that said, yes, though things look like they're trying to begin to top with trigger numbers below, we need to have a sharp rally early in the month for certain reasons. We explained why. We got the rally. Okay. Now, if we start to see arm wrestling type action over the over this month, you know, up, down, where you sort of net out nothing, watch out. Because when you get into March, a lot of our trigger numbers are going to be very high, meaning close to the market. And if we start to topple them, I think you could get a transition to the downside again. And I suspect that the opposite of that will be occurring in the T-bond market, and that will also add impetus to the gold market, putting those two markets again back in the alternative category for most of
risk-off markets.
And I think that's what's shaping up. So I'm looking for arm wrestling, topping action in the stock market probably this month, where you get teasing rallies, teasing sell-offs, but, you know, a net sort of nothing. And if you get with the net sort of nothing, when you get into March, the market won't be able to sneeze. Because if it does, it's going to start breaking stuff. So right now, the answer is no, but we're looking for topping action.
Well, this is why you need to subscribe to Michael Oliver, because he keeps you abreast of these things on weekly and interimly between weekly reports. And I'm just looking at your last 360 weekend report, Michael, and that was January 31st. And you do have charts in there for Apple. You've got Apple, you've got Microsoft, and you've got Amazon. I guess those are some of the big boys you're talking about, right?
Those are the big guys, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if that breaks down, look out below, I guess, is what you're saying.
That's what we argue, and I hold with that. So we have a very narrow situation this time around. This is not a broad market top. It's going to be led by the guys who took you up here.
Yeah. All right, so you got a little bit, I don't know if the right word is shaky, but, you know, I never see you as being shaky. I think that you see when there's shaky foundations or structures, you call them. But with respect to gold, you got just a teeny bit cautious a week ago, a couple of weeks ago or so.
Actually, about a month ago. Since then, you're right, gold's been caught between certain levels. You know, it can't collapse, but it also can't seem to get up above certain levels. It's been stuck between the high 1800s and low 1800s. Still well above that November low, which is down in the 1760s. We think that gold is too aged on the downside in terms of like monthly momentum, the weekly bar action. If you look back to August, there's been a lot of downside sell-offs, most of them redundant, meaning that once you get the sell-off, you go back up again to a lower high maybe, but you recross the same ground. Then you come back down again, recrossing the same ground, and you're really, if you're a bear, and you go back and look at the first sell-off low in August, let's say in silver or in gold, and say, okay, I got short then. You're not making any money.
You've been
6-7 months now trying to sell this market down, these markets down, and you're not going anywhere. Yes, you're getting volatility, but it is not collapsing. And right now, gold is above still, right now, intra-month, today, right this minute, above the highest monthly close of 2011, the old bull market peak. So the high monthly close. So it's, I think it's just confusion over a several quarter period. This happens at every time gold has made a new bull market peak, not a peak, but exceeded a prior major bull market peak. It has gone into a sideways sloppy pattern for 2 to 3 quarters. And then and only then, after spooking everybody with nonsense type action, then it explodes. In other words, you don't go up and take out an old bull market peak and explode. If you buy a new high in gold, let's say, remember the old high in 1980 was 850, okay?
Yeah, right.
Many years later, you came up and took that out. If you bought that high, a new high, you got twisted and turned for about 3/4 of a year. Sometimes up, sometimes down, but they just twisted you all over, and then did they explode to 1900.
Interesting. Yeah, so people, people see a new high and they say, well, it can't go any higher. And there's a little arm wrestling that goes on for a couple of quarters or so.
In other words, don't buy price chart breakouts. Buy momentum breakouts.
Yeah, well, that's what you're all
about. Yeah, that's what we're about.
That's what you're all about. And, why you're on the show all the time is because I see it working. And I don't want, you know, all these sort of impulsive in and out sort of moves. I, as an investor, that's why I appreciate what you do so much. How about the dollar now, and the T-bond? So I guess you see that the T-bond strength likely when the market gets really weak.
They're poised to turn up. They've got their structures built. When you look at momentum, and in other words, it's a basing action. It's clear on the momentum charts of T-bond futures that they want to go up, meaning back up in price, down in yield. They've spent, since March of last year, a heck of a long time drifting lower, if you stand back and look at it. It's no comparison to the advance in T-bond prices, the collapse in yields that occurred over the two prior years to that. So in other words, when you stand back and say, well, rates are going up, price is going down at T-bonds, it's trivial compared to the same periods of time of upside that occurred prior to that early 2020 high. Same with gold. You had this explosive move, you know, since a year ago, actually 2 years ago, you've been going up constantly, but there was a big explosion last summer. And since then, you've really been flagging. But that flagging action, as is typical for some reason, gold bulls seem to be the most nervous longs of any market I know of. You know, stock bulls aren't so nervous and so forth and so on, but the gold bulls are always nervous.
Yeah. Well, it's the counter trade, right? It's the I have to, before we let you go, I've got to get your comments on silver. I know you've been, and maybe comment silver versus gold. I think it's obviously stronger
gold
than
gold. Silver versus
gold
is where to be, period. Yeah. Okay, we've come to that conclusion. Last summer when silver broke out by our metrics at a price of 1948, we thought within a quick period of time it would approach the upper 20s, we said. Well, it went to 29.90 in 3 weeks, a 50% gain. Since then, it's twisted and turned between up till this week, between 29 and 22, most of that action being above the midpoint of that range. For instance, last Friday, silver closed, had a very strong week, closed 26.90. And that's about where it's trading right now. So it gave back its early rally this week when it traded above 30. Now, the trading above 30, if you look at a price chart, again, price charts aren't the best tools. This is a good example of that. By trading 30, you took out the high of last summer. That'd be like gold going above 2070, which had made its high last summer. It's not done it, but silver did. And then immediately backed off through $4, back down to where it closed last week. Well, buying price chart breakouts can be very dangerous because everybody in the world can see it. And as Joe Granville once said, you know, if everybody sees it, you know, something's wrong. And sure enough, if you bought silver above 30, you got beat up in the last 48 hours. Now, I don't think that 30 tick was false. I think it is a positive. But it's very much lagged. It's a price indicator to what momentum has already long ago said, be long silver. And as far as the gold-silver ratio, our metrics turned up last summer when silver turned up to our momentum structures and exploded, so did the spread of silver versus gold. In fact, prior to silver making its new high this week, above last summer's high, the January close of that spread, silver versus gold, made a new high for the move, for the last few years, that is. It's just begun. The silver turn versus gold is fresh. It only goes back to last July. And it's a long-term breakout. So I think silver is the place to be for the next year or two, easily.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. So you also, you know, you've been just in general bullish on commodities, but you put out something the other day I noticed on natural gas. Would you want to comment on natural gas? And then just in general, we can wrap up with your ideas about commodities in general.
It's a ragged component, but it is positive in our view. It has its sell-offs and so forth, but net on balance, it's gaining ground, and it's in positive annual trend. It's not our favorite pick, but basically you can throw a dart at the commodity complex, and anything you hit with the darts is in an uptrend. We think right now, though, that what's interesting is that the monthly momentum of the S&P, and that's not long-term, but when you measure monthly versus a three-month average and you oscillate it, okay, it's an intermediate trend, looks very similar to the monthly momentum action of, for instance, crude oil, which is a key commodity, of course. And we suspect that we've had a huge surge in many commodities over the last 3 to 6 months. Oil's had a huge percent move, copper, while gold and silver have retrenched, by the way. Soybeans, corn, and wheat, they look like there's a crop disaster out there. There isn't, of course. But they've exploded. And when you look at the chart, it would be fully reasonable to see soybeans, corn, wheat, oil go into a congestion or a slight pullback over the next month or two to rest, maybe build a flag. You know what I mean? They had a huge move, and frankly, we think they could, in the process of the stock market trying to top here, also crest and pull back some. The difference being that the pullback you might see in stocks is likely to be a domino effect that keeps going, whereas any pullback we get now in commodities is a buying opportunity. But they do look to be in sync somewhat with the stock market in terms of what might happen over the next month or two. Now, gold and silver are the opposites of that. It's interesting that while commodities have been quite strong the last two, three, 4 months, look at a soybean chart, for example, what has gold and silver been doing? Congestion.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah. So I think what we could get here is if the stock market rolls over, we could get a pause in the commodity explosion, the Bloomberg Commodity Index, but we could get a reassertion of gold, silver, and T-bonds, the alternatives.
Very interesting.
That's kind of what we're expecting.
Well, certainly, I mean, still from a historical point of view, the commodities in general are very, very cheap, I think, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah,
awesome. So we really haven't seen much of a move. I mean,
no, we've seen the beginning statement move, you know, with the first explosion, like the beach ball has been pushed under the underwater and you let go of it, okay? That's just happened. Now, I think it's appropriate, wouldn't surprise me, that those people who are long commodities should prepare for congestion. Slash pullback, but not a top. This is different from stocks. It may start to behave, if stocks roll over, they may start to behave like stocks, like they'll pull back with it, but they're not going to join in. And this is also true, I think, with emerging markets. They look poised to pull back like the S&P does or the NASDAQ, but they don't have the dynamics to go down seriously. And emerging markets, of course, are a reflection of commodities.
Sure. No, that's very good. Always good to have you, Michael, and it's always good to have you for a few extra minutes today as opposed to our usual time with you, and it's really great. Thank you for being with us. And
thank you, Jim.
Again, it's Oliver MSA, folks, olivermsa.com. Seriously consider subscribing. If you're a serious investor, I don't think you can go wrong subscribing to Oliver, Michael Oliver's excellent work based on momentum and structure, and momentum more than the price charts. Momentum and structure and nice, you know, most everybody looks at price charts. Michael looks at momentum and structure, and boy, I'm a believer. That's why Michael's here as often as we can get him. Thank you so much, Michael. All right, folks, we do have to go to break now, but when we come back, Charles Hugh Smith will be with us, and he's going to have some very interesting things to say about the direction of our country and markets and a lot of the stuff that's going on now with GameStop and other things. So we'll be right back with Charles Hugh Smith. Don't go away.
Voice America is available on your Google connected device.
Okay, Google, play Turning Hard Times into Good Times podcast on iHeartRadio.
Try it today.
Great Bear Resources, trading under GBR on the TSXV and GTBAF on the OTCQX, is a gold exploration company focused on their district-scale Dixie Project in the renowned Red Lake Mining District of Ontario. Having made multiple high-grade near-surface gold discoveries, GBR's capital efficiency has allowed them to be fully funded to complete a very active 300,000-meter drill program through 2021. Stay up to date on what's been considered one of the best performing exploration stocks in the last 3 years by visiting greatbearresources.ca.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really happy to have with me Charles Hugh Smith. He's been with us a number of times in the past. Always enjoy his excellent essays that are on the web, and you can subscribe to his special ones by providing a donation to his work. He is a very independent person, and he provides information that you won't get on the mainstream media because those people are bought and paid for. By special interests, but Charles, his special interest is I think I'm safe in saying that Charles special, his real interest is the truth, the objective truth, and that's why I enjoy reading what he has to say. If he's not bought and paid for by someone else, it's Charles speaking for what he believes to be true, and unfortunately, more and more, it seems these days, if it isn't the right kind of truth, the truth so described by certain special interests, then it's not welcome. And that is, I think, very unfortunate. But Charles keeps on speaking, and he keeps on saying what he believes to be true. And for that, I'm very thankful and very happy to welcome him. Thank you for being with us again, Charles.
It's always my pleasure, Jay.
And it's always my pleasure, again, to tell people to go to oftwominds.com, oftwominds.com, to get in touch with Charles and all that he does. You're talking to us from Hawaii, and I think you said it's around 10:30 or something like that in the morning Hawaii, 3 o'clock here in New York. Okay, well, and you had been living in California, but I think now you're permanently in Hawaii. Is that true?
Yes, and I've joined the Exodus, although I do have deep roots in Hawaii. I went to high school and college here and started my first business here, and my wife's from here. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I've never been there. I think it would be nice to go if we ever get past COVID. I just don't like the idea of wearing a mask for 24 hours and anyway, on an airplane or whatever. So, but anyway, I'd like to focus on your article, your January 27th article, The Coming Revolt of the Middle Class. You know, looking at statistics, they show that up until about 1971 or so, income distribution was quite egalitarian in the United States. That CEOs made more than average workers, for sure, and doctors did pretty well, and some other people, but it was nothing like the kind of disparity in the income that we see now. And there's a chart that you've shown on one of your recent essays that shows that something like, the super wealthy, the 0.1% of the population, garner nearly all of the income growth. So wherever the GDP is growing, they're capturing virtually all of it. What do you think the cause of the demise of America's middle class? What do you think the cause of this demise is? Because once upon a time, America's middle class was looked at as sort of the envy of the world.
Right. Well, Jay, that's a big topic, but I think it's really critical to the path of the nation's future. If we cannot recover the widespread prosperity that that we call the middle class, then we're going down a path that leads to bad things happening when the prosperity is not widespread, right? And it's not there's no social mobility for people to say I can get a piece of that if I just work hard and do the right things. I think there's a couple of reasons. One is, of course, that the central bank, the Federal Reserve, has dropped interest rates to zero. And back in the good old days, the government actually guaranteed you 5.25% interest on your savings account. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not bad. I mean, you'd have to be a rich person and invest in a hedge fund to get 5% now. You get 0.1% now. So that I referenced an article in the journal Foreign Affairs, which is one of the premier publications in the U.S. And the author said that 97% of all the income generated from capital, meaning savings, 401 accounts, rental houses, small businesses, anything that we call capital, 97% of all that income goes to the top 10%. The bottom 90%, which of course includes the middle class, gets a mere 3% of all the income from capital earned in the United States. So I look at this and go, well, this means that the middle class has been decapitalized. Their capital is no longer productive. Yeah, you own your house, but that's more like a lottery ticket nowadays than a source of income. So I think that's a big difference. And another study by this think tank, RAND, R-A-N-D, then they did a study, and this is, again, a premier institution in America. This is not some fly-by-night thing that started a few weeks ago. It's a premier think tank, and they found that since the early 70s, as you mentioned, from that time forward, the last 45 years, the economy has seen a $50 trillion transfer of wealth from the people who earn most of their money from working to people who just own capital. In other words, you know, the billionaires and financiers and hedge funders. And that's a staggering amount of money. Now, admittedly, that's over a couple of generations, but I think the middle class has been impoverished by the policies of the Federal Reserve and forces such as financialization and globalization.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly believe, and I think David Stockman made the comment on this show some time ago, that you can't have a thriving capitalist system if you don't allow capital to be priced by the market. In other words, if someone is going to suppress the price of capital by creating endless amounts of money, then what you're doing is you're encouraging consumption in a way that it isn't natural. You're discouraging saving, just as you said. And I know Ron Paul used to talk all the time about when he was in Congress. He would criticize Greenspan or whoever the Federal Reserve chairman was, criticize them for this very thing, that he was essentially robbing the middle class, robbing people who were just working hard and playing by the rules and saving money and not living beyond their means. But then come along this notion of Keynesian economics that somehow we can get rich by living beyond our means. Charles, it seems to me that something really big happened 1971, when we went off the gold standard. It allowed, along with the petrodollar, America's military might being used to enforce the dollar as the world's reserve currency. It allowed us to create endless amounts of money based on debt, not on an asset, and then redistribute wealth to all manner of government entities and people and corporations that were tied to the government. Do you see that as a trend that might have hollowed out the middle class or been partly responsible for it?
Absolutely, Jay. There's an author, and of course, I love everything that David Stockman writes, because he understands how capitalism is supposed to work and once worked, and it doesn't work, and that's kind of what we're talking about now. Yeah. There's a book out by, I believe the author is Matt Stoller. It's mm-hmm. called Big, and it's about the damage done to the American economy by monopolies, you know, and cartels, which are the same thing. And so we all know what big tech does, and there are lots of other monopolies, you know, hospital chains, big pharma, and so these have destroyed a lot of the entrepreneurial foundation of America, because they control markets and then they use their profits to buy political favoritism, right, to lighten the regulations and lighten their tax burdens. And so and another factor I think we should discuss is the heavy tax burden on the middle class. Mm-hmm. Now if you're in the lower middle class and you've got a couple of children and you're making like $50,000 to $60,000, you're not going to be paying too much federal tax, but you might be paying really high sales tax, property taxes. Yes. You know, vehicle registration taxes in the hundreds of dollars. And then if you're doing pretty well and you're in the upper middle class and you're making $150,000 or even $200,000, if you've got a kid in college or you've got healthcare expenses, you're taking mm-hmm. care of an elderly parent or something, you're not doing very well, because
that's right.
So much of your money goes to taxes.
Yes.
And I mean, part of why so many people are fleeing high tax states like California's property tax can be $15,000 to $20,000 a year. Then healthcare is expensive. You know, vehicle taxes are expensive. Sales taxes. I mean, it's like, how much money do you have left? And when we think back to when we started working, we were able to keep a lot more of our money.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that? I mean, that's statistically the case. What we had bought a lot more goods and services than what we're left with now buys.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be the case, and what is Hawaii like in those terms? Does it have a high tax structure?
It's a very high tax structure,
and so
this is why we're seeing an exodus of very wealthy people from California, who because the wealthy can hire tax attorneys, And they have their foundations and so on and so forth, where they kind of hide their money and then they use their foundations to make money, and influence political, you know, activities. So the super wealthy have a lot of a lot more power to evade taxes than the rest of us, and I think that's part of why people are angry, you know. And I think part of what we're seeing with Wall Street bets and the recent action in the market is people are angry that the system is so skewed, it's so rigged to the super wealthy in a way that, as you mentioned, was not the case pre-1971, pre-75, you know.
Charles, what do you make of this GameStop activity and the retail investors trying to smoke out the big boys? Or who do you think I don't really have a good handle on who these retail investors are. Are they the people in the middle class that have lost their way, or are they young yuppies, or I don't know what they call them, young people that you know, are living in their parents' basements now, and might tend towards the left side of the political spectrum? Or do you have a sense, or what are your thoughts about GameStop and the revolution? Because we see some very interesting alignments in Washington, at least initially, AOC and the senator from Texas there, although AOC is saying she wants nothing to do with the guy that was the cause of the riots in Washington. And then on the one hand, so you have AOC standing up for the retail people, and you have Elizabeth Warren on the other side, who's who's sort of defending the big boys on Wall Street.
Yeah, well, Jay, I think it's a fascinating topic, and there's a lot of angles to it, and I don't claim to be an expert. But what I see is, again, going back to the middle class, is that a lot of these young traders are apparently millennials. And they feel, and I think with justification, that generationally they have a much harder row to hoe than the previous generations. In other words, when those of us who were going to college in the 70s or early 80s, we didn't have huge student loans. College was cheap,
no.
You know,
yeah.
And I could rent an apartment for, you know, a few hundred dollars, and now it's a few thousand dollars if you're trying. So I think that there's a generational injustice that not only is the money flowing to the very top, but the people who are at the top tend to be older. And I'm part of that group that I was able to buy a house at far less amount of money than a millennial would have to pay now. And so I think that part of why the middle class will rebel is the generational inequality, right? That and it's not an older person's fault that they bought a house. But it's a matter of luck. The economy was sounder and fairer, right? And more open to social mobility. Now the social mobility ladder has been broken. And so the millennials are going, well, what do I do to get ahead? I guess I might as well gamble in the stock market, because that's how I see all these billionaires doing it.
Yeah, right. Right. And then when they come to understand that the deck is stacked against them, that really makes them furious. And you pointed out in a recent article, you talked about the problems that we have here, the structural problems that with regard to the Fed and how the deck is sort of stacked against the little guy. Maybe you could talk about that. I think your article, it's the article that the stock market fatally wounded by the truth will stumble and crash, is an article that you wrote January 30th. You talk about the Fed and the stock market as being fraudulent. Maybe you'd like to just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I thank you, Jay. And again, it goes to this, our topic of the day, which is the revolt of the middle class. That again, two generations ago, the middle class had retirement, IRAs and 401ks that were often funded by, their employer. Now that's less the case, right? And back then, you could count on some kind of safe return. The market, had its volatile moments, but in general, it was, you were buying a piece of a company. Mm-hmm. Now it's really a casino, and it's rigged, because the people who who can front run us. In other words, they can look at the order book. When I place an order on TD Ameritrade, they can see it before my order executes, and they can buy it for, you know, they can make a dime or a nickel or something. And then I've been basically ripped off because, you know, they could front run my order. All of Wall Street is filled with these kinds of tricks. And so it's the market is not really fair and open. And people will say, well, it's always been manipulated back from the 20s. And we go, okay, yes, of course, you know, large players can manipulate the market. But we're talking about the structure of it, you know, that just, it's not just some bad players. It's we're talking about the whole thing is rigged from the ground up. And so it's very hard to navigate a casino. And that's basically what the American economy has become. And the speculators are the ones who are making billions. And so it's like the incentives are for speculation rather than being productive. And this is, I think, really devastating to the nation. The people aren't looking for ways to be productive because that's no longer profitable. They're looking for ways to speculate and rig some market.
Yeah. It goes to the in essence the lack of health in our economy as a whole, and I would argue that that has so much to do with this massive destruction of capital by not allowing capital to be properly priced. You know, I mean, our first mortgage, Mrs. Taylor and I, was 17.5%, right in 1981. You know, capital really cost something, and it was a reason to save money. And you could invest in companies, and I would argue that you still can, but it's very difficult. It takes a lot of time. And also, the big guys have these advantages, and certainly on short selling, I think the markets are basically rigged in favor of the short sellers, certainly with the smaller cap companies. I've seen that. But I would argue, Charles, and let me know what you think, that it's this massive amount of money that's pumped into this system that goes in the direction of those that are privileged. No, whenever we see another $2 trillion pumped into the system, guess what happens? It doesn't go into the Main Street. It goes into Wall Street. So Wall Street has the money, and they bid up stocks. That's why that 0.1% is gaining all the wealth. That's the way I see it.
I totally agree. And I think everybody that looks at the economy and the financial system would have to agree with you. You know, that those closest to that huge money spigot can then buy up everything and manipulate markets and establish monopolies. And the rest of us are left with a trickle down, which statistically turns out to be 3%. 90% of us get to share 3%. Of all the wealth being generated. And that's a statistic that I think everybody should really think about.
Well, I would say that's a recipe for a disaster. And I wonder if what we saw last summer, with people on the left tearing apart cities, wrecking, setting on fire public buildings, and then this latest fiasco in Washington, D.C., if that isn't a symptom of what you're talking about, this disparity of income and wealth. But, Charles, you mentioned in one of your articles, you said America has no plan to reverse this destructive tide of neo-feudal privilege, is the way you call it, or pillage. With just 2 minutes left, maybe you could just comment very quickly on what kind of a plan do you think would be needed to restore the kind of health that we enjoyed in the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s?
Well, great question, Jay. And of course, I think you outlined one part of critical part of the answer, which is we have to get rid of the Federal Reserve and other central banks managing markets to benefit the privileged. So in other words, capital has to be freely priced on the market, right? Uh-huh. And along with risk. And the price will go up because capital should be expensive, because then you're going to make wiser decisions with deploying it. I think we also need to restore the ladder of social mobility, which means making it affordable and easy to start your own business and become self-employed. Mm-hmm. And right now, that's just become a regulatory nightmare. And so very few people have the ability and the skills to do that. And then we can teach people those skills. In other words, that should be a core part of our education, not just you know, math and science to become a technocrat or an employee for some corporation that has a monopoly, but to start your own business. And so we need to get rid of all the deadwood regulations. We need to lower taxes by lowering the expenses of the way we live and our government. And so we need to get back to the frugality that you talked about, but also focus on what does it take to get social mobility. And, you know, what's funny is the U.S. military has done a better job than the rest of American society in offering social mobility to its its the enlisted people.
Yeah.
They have a meritocracy, and if you do the work and you learn what you're, you know, got to learn, and you get along with people, and then, you know, you can rise through the ranks. And that's, we need to take that model and apply it to our entire society. Not necessarily, I'm saying, in a military sense, but to take those lessons that the military learned and has applied and apply them everywhere. Mm-hmm. So, we need social mobility restored.
Yeah, amen to that. And it doesn't matter race, creed, or color, or religion, or whatever. It's if you do the job, it's a meritocracy, and I think we're losing that to a great extent. I would also argue, Charles, that we ought to teach kids about capitalism in school. They have no idea. They don't understand a supply curve or a demand curve and why it makes sense. But if they could see that in their real lives, it does make sense. If people understood capitalism, but they're never taught it in the schools. So that's another thing I would throw, add to you. Excellent. Definitely I agree with all that you've said. We are out of time. Charles, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. It's always a pleasure. Your insights, and again, it's oftwominds.com is where people need to go to sign up and learn to know Charles and sign up for his letter. Very good. Thank you, Charles, for being with us.
Thank you so much, Jay. It was my pleasure.
All righty, folks. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, I'm going to have David Duffy, former portfolio manager and author of The Coffee Can Portfolio. He's with me, as well as Dr. Quentin Henning. He'll be here to talk about Irving Resources. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Novo Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Pilbara region of Western Australia. Novo has recently partnered with Sumitomo Corporation of Japan to evaluate, advance, and develop the company's Australian gold projects. With over $40 million in cash and $60 million committed from Sumitomo, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.